Welcome to another episode of Disrupt Ed. I'm your host, Ron Stefanski, and we have an exciting episode to share with you in the world of disruption. What am I talking about? A 5G wired workforce, augmented technology, interconnected, globally interdependent, AI accelerated, pandemic interrupted, and climate change needed world. And so today we're going to be talking about sustainability. We're going to be talking about new sources of energy, none more exciting than the world of hydrogen, using hydrogen to fuel the world and reduce our carbon footprint. And today I'm really privileged to have on the show Whit Urban from Q Hydrogen, the CEO. Whit, thank you so much for making time available. It's really great to get you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
Absolutely. So let's get right into this. You know, you started out in a different industry before you pivoted to hydrogen. So maybe for our listeners and viewers, you can share a little bit about your background, because as we find when people are going into new industries, they have a very eclectic background that brings them into, you know, new technologies or new opportunities. So let's start there.
Sure. So I'll go way back quickly. So I was an entrepreneur from the age of six. I started my first eBay company back then, selling antiques and all these other things. And then when I went to college, I ended up going to Babson, so an entrepreneurial business school that kind of had that background for folks like me. And originally was going to go into the world of investment banking, but got a chance to join an executive fast track program for the defense company Raytheon instead. And so I did that. Raytheon had their program that did some continuing ed work also at Harvard Business while you were moving every 8 months to a different part of the company. And then ended that program coming out as a program manager in the aerospace and defense world for Raytheon. I was there for a bit and then moved into what is actually my family company. So what we're talking about today is the hydrogen technology aspect of an overall body of technology that's been under development now for over 28 years. And this is the piece that we are commercializing first. And from my end, I've been with the company now, it'll be 14 years in October, so quite a long time.
Wow, fantastic. And you're working with your father, who's sort of the brainiac behind this, if you will, correct? And he is championed and done the research on a lot of the technology that's proprietary, but that you're going to be utilizing in this venture. Is that correct?
Correct, yep.
Yep, great. So maybe you can tell us now, Q Hydrogen has some pretty big plans to open a plant that is complete, an energy power plant that's completely fueled by hydrogen. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? That's a pretty big undertaking.
It is a big undertaking, no matter how you look at the world of hydrogen. I mean, we're now moving into an era where the word hydrogen is becoming a household name again, but for so long was not. The Inflation Reduction Act, of course, has helped with that. But what we are doing, this again is a piece of an overall body of tech that's been under development for a long time. The hydrogen piece was actually discovered all the way back in 2008 based on this technology and was not focused until 14. So in 14, everything pivoted to focus on opening what will be the world's first renewable hydrogen power plant. It's also economically viable without a subsidy, and that's the key.
This plant will not be subsidized by any local municipalities or anyone. It's completely independent.
Correct. And I mean, the IRA exists, so we will take advantage of it, assuming that everything stays in place, just like everyone else who's working in the clean hydrogen space. But it's not something that is required for our financial viability.
So that's a big lift. I mean, that's a big step forward. Sometimes with all these new energy technologies, it's not so much, harnessing them as making them commercially viable and making the output economically feasible, right?
That's correct. There's a lot of cool tech that a lot of people are developing in so many different areas. And the difference between what we're doing and a lot of others is we've been able to pull together the firepower between us and the folks that have been involved over these years, because 28 years is a heck of a long time. over this period of time to take it from something that started at benchtop scale and is now massively commercially ready and viable. So to give you an idea of output, the facility that we're opening with just one of our units is capable of producing 100,000 kilograms of this hydrogen-based fuel a day. And another key, and we'll be unveiling this later this year, but we've made some major strides in the area of also transportation, distribution, and storage that will help as well.
So when you think about hydrogen power, where are the practical applications that we're going to see first and foremost as your plant goes online?
So the major missing piece on the practicality end is really just what are you doing to produce it and how much does it cost? Is it something that is truly renewable or is it something that is hydrocarbon based? The use that we have come up with, the way that we're using it as a power plant, we're actually putting it into modified first Caterpillar 3516, previously natural gas reciprocating engines to produce electricity. It's a highly inefficient way to use this fuel or to use really any fuel, but it's kind of the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. We wanted to use a platform that is highly recognizable globally, has lots of different uses across industries. And our announcement will basically be we're financially viable selling electricity at rates more similar to what you'd see in the southern and western U.S. up in New England, because, I mean, they haven't seen rates like that in decades. We're doing that to attract industry to an area that lost their main financial hub in the form of a paper mill. So the paper mill went out of business. It had been previously operating from the late 1800s to the mid-2000s. And so when you lose a main employer like that, it has devastating effects on the local economy. So our idea is we're going to provide electricity directly to users on the site, hopefully attract industrial users that can create a decent employment base for the area, and then create a model that's something that could be done over and over again.
This is really exciting. I can't, you know, when we think about energy, we think about I think a lot of people are highly concerned about the fact that when you look at all the statistics and all the reports coming out of the World Economic Forum and other entities and enterprises, the future doesn't look good for energy. We're not making sufficient progress in bringing our carbon footprint down. This is going to be a major leap forward, is it not, in terms of doing just that?
It will be. And because of how we're doing it, and some of the forms that this hydrogen can take and how we can integrate into previously existing industries, it's something that will be friendly for a lot of current industries, even oil and gas, the way it is today, and then help to transition toward full use in the case of our facility. Once it's up and running and all the engines are warmed up, we're using 100% of it. But there are ways that we have discovered some interesting pieces in the blending world that will have massive impact on things like global shipping. So being able to use the same power plants on these ships without some of the same issues that you see associated with hydrogen currently, while massively reducing the carbon footprint. Potential repowering of things like coal power plants and other things that are either shutting down because their emissions are too high or their renewable energy credits are no longer in place, so they're not financially viable. It works in a lot of different ways. So we're starting with this facility in New Hampshire and then moving into many of these other industrial pieces that I mentioned shortly after.
Mm-hmm. And when's the launch plan for this hydrogen plant?
Well, we're doing everything we can to open before year end this year. We have all of our major infrastructure in place. We've been given the go ahead on an R&D side to be able to get some data related to emissions when we're running the facility on this fuel from a power plant perspective. And so we're putting all those things together, determining best path forward, but the hope is before year end.
As we've had other guests on the show talking about sustainability, there are two big areas that you mentioned that I want to dig in a little bit deeper on. One is shipping. You know, I don't think people understand just how much the emissions are from global shipping, and not only the impact on the environment, but the impact on the oceans as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at global shipping, I mean, it's you can compare it similarly to aviation. I mean, it's a massive amount of carbon output along with other waste streams that are a part of it. The International Maritime Organization in London has rules and guidelines that they've set out globally for emissions reductions by 2030, 40, and 50. We've talked to several of the families that own a lot of the big shipping companies and various groups. They all kind of say the same thing. They see ways to get to 2030, but 40 and 50, they don't know how they're going to get there without some massive infrastructure shifts. And so we are trying to work with some folks in this space to be able to utilize a lot, because these ships basically are like giant diesel or bunker fuel power plants running electric motors on these massive vessels. So people probably don't think about it. They probably think about it like, oh, you've got various engines that run on this fuel. No, it's basically a giant power plant or multiple power plants on the right. ocean running these things. So we're working through ways to be able to utilize a lot of that infrastructure and massively reduce the emissions while not upsetting the current distribution supply chain very much, kind of working with the folks that are in the fueling space, working with the hydrocarbon piece and keeping that together, because it's going to take a while to move things, especially in that industry, but having a big impact while doing that at the same time.
You know, that's really, really important. And you mentioned the other thing that you mentioned that intrigues me is being able to transition out of coal. Coal is clearly the most disruptive in terms of the environment. And it's really, really problematic. You know, we were looking at the math recently with one of my other guests in terms of California's decision to create all electrical vehicles by 2030. And one of the scientists that I work with figured out that if they were to actually be able to do that, which is highly questionable at this point, but if in fact they did that, they'd actually be increasing emissions on the planet overall, because 80% of the current battery manufacturing output is coming from Chinese plants that are coal driven. So I think as we look at sustainability and as we look at what you're doing, it has a ripple effect across the, you know, across the globe, because all these businesses, all these supply chains are globally interconnected, as we say.
Yeah. I mean, another piece to add to that on the electrification of vehicles, we just look at our grid here in the United States and in Europe, and it's a problem elsewhere too. There are all of these goals related to vehicle electrification, AI, data centers, et cetera. There's a massive gap, though, between what is projected to be the available power output and the demand for all of these things to be able to work. And that's mostly because power plants are not being built fast enough. Transmission and distribution isn't being increased or rebuilt fast enough. And a lot of it has to do with regulatory frameworks that have massive backlogs in order to get some of these facilities up. And I understand why this exists, but I think reality is going to be setting in fairly soon. And you kind of see it already with some of the announcements that are coming during this current presidential run, where certain goals on electrification of vehicles and other things are being dropped, because the path to get there really in a sane manner right now, from what's publicly known, is that there may be some things coming, including some things that we are doing and others that may help it. But based on when you look at the current landscape, it would be extremely unlikely to make it there.
Right. No, it's really fascinating. We had a guest on, Kristen Barnes from Engie, and they were talking about the controversial, but now, you know, meritorious decision they made to create a plan to completely convert their energy businesses into sustainable energy within 5 years. And the company's board of directors even questioned whether or not that was possible or in their best interest. But lo and behold, they not only did it, but they increased their profitability while doing it. So there is a lot of promise in moving toward new technology. And I think there's also going to be a lot of money. I mean, when we look at the sustainability economy, we're looking at an influx of $10 trillion on the built environment over the next decade. And that's going to, that to me signals that the financial incentives are aligned with the outcomes we're desiring. That, in other words, there will be incentives to build more clean energy plants and clean energy applications because the government incentives and the financial incentives are in place, and it's going to become a really big business.
It is, and you look at the early days of like solar and wind. The subsidy programs that were created back then were basically the shot of adrenaline to give them a real leg up to keep moving forward. And now you see solar and wind being large parts of the energy production portfolios for some of the biggest power companies in the world on the productive capacity side. So we're seeing a lot of that now with alternatives. There's a lot more understanding of how the environment is, and the reality for a lot of it, no matter what side you're on regarding climate change, is the way that we gained our energy today is unsustainable. And there are other things that come out of issues like pumping a bunch of dirty emissions into the air that people don't think about. Because you talk about CO2, yeah, fine, that's a big one. But CO2 is something where with sequestration and other things, you can figure out a way to use it and reduce it. But particulate matter inhalation is an even bigger deal in a lot of ways for human health, like PM2.5. You look at certain areas of the world like China. There are even times where Salt Lake City has some of the worst air in the world. And that is it, and it's related to lots of different emissions factors. But in a lot of ways, that is a massive problem that has to be dealt with, along with the just general carbon reduction piece.
Right. And without being political, just to be clear, I think that, I'm on the side of science here. I don't think there's a lot of science that disputes the fact that the climate is, temperature is rising and that we have to mobilize. And the other thing you cite with Salt Lake City is really important, because what it shows is that unless we all kind of hold hands on this internationally, we're going to be subject to particulate matter. We're going to be subject to global warming from our neighbors, big producers like China, like Russia, like the United States. And so we really do have to take a more aggressive and global approach. So it's really exciting and encouraging to hear what you guys are doing at Q Hydrogen. We've been talking with Whitaker Irvin Jr. from Q Hydrogen, the CEO of a company dedicated to bringing out hydrogen and carbon neutral energy production. Thank you, Irvin, for being here. Thank you, Whitaker, for being here. And any last thoughts as you think about this world of energy that you're getting ready to launch into?
Well, all I can say is, for us, it's been a long road to get here, but I look at what's happening globally with innovations all around the world, and there are a lot of people working on a lot of different technologies to help solve these issues, and I'm excited about the future of energy, really, in the world. There are a lot of things going on globally that are very tumultuous on all sides, but I feel like there are some silver linings that may help calm the tide a little bit and bring people back toward the center. That's what I'm hopeful for.
Yes, no, I'm equally hopeful because, as we talk to many of the thought leaders and experts like you about sustainability, about global climate change, about climate warming, you know, what we're hearing time and time again is from the doers, not only the thought leaders, but the thought doers like yourself, building a plant, building alternatives. What we're hearing time and time again is their optimism that they do believe the forces are aligning and moving in the right direction, sufficient to bring us back from the brink that we often hear about in the press, about the fact that there's a certain point where we're going to unleash a series of climate events that could be irreversible. So it is encouraging. It's really great to hear your story, Whit, and to share it with our audience. I'd like to invite you back after the new year to hear about the plant coming online. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining us. This has been another episode of Disrupt Ed with Whit Urban, CEO of Q Hydrogen, and your host, one and only Ron Stefanski. Listen, get engaged with us. Get disrupted. What does that mean? Engage our podcast. Share it, like it, comment on it. Let us know how you feel and join us for another episode soon to follow on Disrupt Ed. Thanks so much.